start with some readings. And as I said, we're focusing on the fourth section of the Satipatthana Sutta, Dhammanupassana Satipatthana. And I thought just before going into that, just to give a little bit of an overview of the Satipatthana, mainly just as a bit of a reminder of the context of the those aspects of the Dhammanupassana. So that the way that the Satipatthana is structured begins with the Buddha just pointing out this aspect of the Satipatthana. Monks, this is the direct path for the purification of beings, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of dukkha and discontent, for acquiring the true method, for the realization of Nibbana, namely the four Satipatthanas. There's a refrain that goes through the whole sutta, both in terms of kind of definition defining the basis of Satipatthana. And then there is a refrain, then there's a laying out a particular object of attention, and then there's a refrain that follows that, so that just to go over that. And what are the four? Here, monks, in regard to the body, a monk abides contemplating the body, diligent, clearly knowing, and mindful, free from desires and discontent in regard to the world. And the same for feelings, for mind, and for dhammas. In regard to dhammas, he abides contemplating dhammas, diligent, clearly knowing, and mindful, free from desires and discontent in regard to the world. And then goes through the so in terms of the that definition, how the Buddha defines the maybe approach to the establishing of mindfulness, diligent, clearly knowing, mindful, free from desires and discontent in regard to the world. Ajahn Jeff translates that as ardent, alert, mindful, putting aside greed and distress with reference to the world. And that shows something, I've mentioned that, probably over and over, Ātāpi sampajāno satimā vinaya lokhe apichāto manasā. It's a refrain that definition or the setting up of the approach to mindfulness, how one establishes it, what are the parameters and boundaries and foundations of how we establish mindfulness. After going through each of the aspects of Satipatthana, say the very first one is breathing and attention to the breath, and then once that has been explained as a basis, and of course it goes through the breath and postures and various activities, anatomical parts, elements, so on, feelings, mind, then dhammas, and each of the different aspects in dhammas. So that at the end of each aspect, then it's the refrain. And I'll read it as the first one in terms of the in regard to the body. In this way, in regard to the body, he abides contemplating the body internally, or he abides contemplating the body externally, or he abides contemplating the body both internally and externally. He abides contemplating the nature of arising in the body, or he abides contemplating the nature of passing away in the body, or he abides contemplating the nature of both arising and passing away in the body. Mindful that there is a body, quote unquote, is established in him to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and continuous mindfulness, and he abides independent, not clinging to anything in the world. That is how, in regard to the body, he abides contemplating the body. And of course, it goes through the different aspects of the body, and that postures, parts of the body, so on. And then the different aspects of dhammas.
What's the formula for that? Do you know how that starts off
with? Hmm?
How's that? Your second refrain is the formula?
Second refrain? No. Not off the top of my head. Yeah, the Pali's not in here. Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, that so that the ajatangwa bahidangwa, that's inner external, ajata bahidha, that's the internal and external, and the samudaya, the arising, niloda dhamma. So that the sense of those aspects of the how that what are the, like, bare knowledge and continuous mindfulness? The pati pasati, pati sati mataya. So those are, that refrain, of course, follows all the different sections. And that is something that goes over and over again with the body, feeling, mind, and the dhammas. and now, as an overview of those aspects of the refrain, then I thought to read something from Ajahn Jeff's, which is from Wings to Awakening, in his explanation of the that establishing of mindfulness and application of mindfulness, and of course we'll be focusing on the aspect of the dhammas, dhammanupassana, but in his introduction in this aspect of it, he's using the mindfulness of breathing as the basis, which is a good way of picking up an example of how to do this in relationship to the body, but of course the application is, it can be put across to the to mind objects. In breath practice, mindfulness means keeping the breath in mind as the theme of the meditation. Alertness means being sensitive to the sensations of the breath. So he's coming back to those atapi sampajana satima. Ardency means sticking with the process relentlessly, as well as taking up the stages of training in which one tries to be aware of the entire body with each in and out breath, and to let the breath sensations grow calm. In terms of jhana factors, mindfulness would be related to directed thought, alertness to evaluation, and ardency to singleness of preoccupation. As awareness fills the body and the breath grows calm, one's alertness stays steadily with the breath, and the mind enters the singleness of jhana. At this point, one no longer needs consciously to direct the mind to the breath or to enlarge one's awareness any further. Thus, the mind, as above, can develop subtler mindfulness and alertness to enter the second jhana. Once concentration has been established in one's body, one's own body, in this way, it may give rise to a similar knowledge and vision of the bodies of other people. Knowledge and vision here seems to denote intuitive knowledge through the powers that some people develop through concentration. If used properly, this knowledge can help develop a sense of dispassion toward the processes of existence, as one sees that all bodies, even the most desirable, are subject to the same common shortcomings of being inconstant, stressful, and not self. Whether one pursues this meditation with one's own body or the bodies of others, it comes under the first stage of practice, as indicated in the following phrase. In this way, he remains focused internally on the body in and of itself, or externally on the body in and of itself, or both internally and externally on the body in and of itself. So this is coming back to that the refrain at the end. Once the first stage has produced a solid state of concentration, the second stage, the development of the frame of reference, can begin. One remains focused on the phenomena of origination with regard to the body, on the phenomena of passing away with regard to the body, or on the phenomenon of origination and passing away with regard to the body. The phenomenon of origination and passing away covers three sorts of events: conditioned occurrences in the object that forms one's frame of reference, and this is how, of course, Ajahn Jeff translates satipatthana as frame of reference. In the object that forms one's frame of reference itself, in this case the body, events in the other two object frames of reference, feelings and mind, or events in the approach frame of reference, that is, the mental qualities that are developed in or interfere with the process of taking a frame of reference to begin with. So that's in reference to using the approach frame of reference. This is how he's defining dhammas, because those are hindrances, the khandhas, the ayatanas, so sense bases, five khandhas, seven factors of enlightenment, and the Four Noble Truths. For instance, when focused on the body, one may notice the arising and passing away of breath sensations in the body, or one might notice the arising and passing away of feelings of pleasure or mental states of irritation while one remains anchored in the body. Or one might notice lapses of mindfulness in one's focus on the body. And so that those are each different bases of the satipatthana. In each of these cases, if the origination and passing away is of neutral events, such as the aggregates, one is directed simply to be aware of them as events and to let them follow their natural course unimpeded, so as to see what factors accompany them and lead to their origination. As for events connected with the presence or absence of skillfulness, however, one is encouraged to manipulate and experiment with them so as to observe and further understand their causal interrelationships. This will enable one to become skillful in maximizing skillful mental qualities and minimizing unskillful ones. In other words, one develops insight into the process of origination and passing away by taking an active and sensitive role in the process. Just as one learns about eggs by trying to cook with them, gathering experience from one's successes and failures in attempting increasingly difficult dishes. The need for active participation in the practice explains why meditation must begin by mastering a particular technique, rather than passively watching whatever may arise in the present. The technique gives shape to one's present input into the present moment and makes one more sensitive to this aspect of this-that conditionality, or iddha-paccayatā. It also provides an active context for appreciating mental qualities as they help or hinder one's success in the technique. Eventually, when one's sensitivity is sufficiently well-developed, one can go beyond the technique to explore and master the process of causality as it functions in developing skillful qualities in the mind. This process can be illustrated with a passage devoted to equanimity. In the first step, as one is still in the beginning stages of observing the mind in its attempts at meditation, one simply discerns the presence and absence of equanimity. And then this is a quote from the Satipatthana. There is a case where, there being equanimity as a factor for awakening present within, he discerns that equanimity as a factor for awakening is present within me. Or, there being no equanimity as a factor for awakening present within, he discerns that equanimity as a factor for awakening is not present within me. That's end of quote. In watching the course of this arising and passing away, as one tries to bring the mind to the equanimity of jhana, one should begin to see patterns of cause and effect in what does and doesn't work. This enables one skillfully to give rise to equanimity, even when it is not present of its own accord, and, once it is present, can strengthen it until it reaches the point of utmost development. And this is a quote again from the sutta. He discerns how there is the arising of unarisen equanimity as a factor for awakening, and he discerns how there is the culmination of the development of equanimity as a factor for awakening once it has arisen. A similar process is recommended for events in the object frames of reference. This is shown by the standard description of the 16 steps of breath meditation. One trains oneself to breathe conscious of the entire body, or to breathe sensitive to feelings of rapture and pleasure. One trains oneself to satisfy, steady, and release the mind. The meditator replaces unskillful forms of distress, joy, and equanimity with more skillful versions of the same emotions, and then replacing skillful distress with skillful joy, and skillful joy with skillful equanimity. As this process leads to stronger and more refined states of concentration, it refines one's sensitivity to the fact that the grosser one's participation in the process of origination and passing away in the mind, the grosser the levels of stress that results. This leads one to let go of the grosser levels of one's participation as one is able to detect them. This can have one of two results. One, it may lead to even more refined states of concentration as one abandons the factors that obscure equanimity, or as one focuses one's equanimity on ever more refined objects. Or two, as one becomes able to focus on the activity involved even in refining equanimity, one comes to realize that it too is a process of input into the present, fabricated for the sake of non-becoming. Thus, as a sense of dispassion develops toward equanimity, one goes beyond it to the state of non-fashioning, atamayata, through the third and final stage of frames of reference practice. And this is that last part of the refrain in the sutta. This is a quote, or is mindfulness that there is a body or feeling, mind, or mental quality. There is a body is maintained simply to the extent of knowledge and recollection, and it remains independent, unsustained, by not clinging to anything in the world. End of quote. This stage corresponds to a mode of perception that the Buddha in Machima 121 terms entry into emptiness. And it's a quote from that sutta. Thus he regards this mode of perception as empty of whatever is not there. Whatever remains, he discerns as present, there is this. This is the culminating equipoise where the path of the practice leads unmediated to a state of non-fashioning, and from there to the fruit of awakening and release. Some meditators, reading the two preceding passages, try to step immediately to the stage of non-fashioning, without first having gained the inner sensitivity to cause and effect, action and non-action, that comes from developing concentration. In practice, though, this doesn't work. Only through that sensitivity can the basic causal relationships of dependent co-arising and this-that conditionality be discovered. This discovery is needed to give rise to a sense of dispassion, as one grows more and more disenchanted with the inconstant and artificial nature of all mental phenomena and develops a strong desire to gain release from them. It is also needed to uncover the precise point of non-fashioning between becoming and non-becoming, where that release can be found. So this is the basic pattern of the three stages of Satipatthana meditation, or frames of reference meditation. So one, focusing on events in and of themselves in the present moment. Two, understanding their causal relationships with other events by learning to manipulate them skillfully. And then three, arriving at a state of fully developed equipoise, transcending even one's skill, free from any present input into the causal network. So this is basic to all aspects of Buddhist meditation practice. Among other things that underlies the stages in breath meditation, mastery of concentration, and the strategy of discernment leading to the transcendent. Thus it should be kept firmly in mind, and he's referring to it, say, the book, should be kept in mind when reading passages, not only in this section, but also throughout the entire book. So that similarly, that's in these readings that we'll be doing. It's good to sort of have to get one's mind around these, that this is a framework that is going to be applied, and there will be, it may not be explicitly pointed out, but it's going to be, that's just the nature of this, the Satipatthana, to be able to remember that framework. And as we develop the different sutta readings and perspectives and angles of how we look at things. Any questions on that? That's the general sort of overview that I wanted to, before I get into the aspects of the Dhammanupassana.
That first part of the essay we were talking about, you mentioned Jeff's, he said the stilling the breath sensations, mm-hmm. and then using the breath as your meditation object.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any kind of, what does he mean actually by stilling the breath sensations?
Well, I think just refining or settling, making it more peaceful, more settled. Mm-hmm. So that there's an increased degree of tranquility, both an inner tranquility of the body, but the tranquility of the of the mind that is as observing or as engaging in the process, as they're, of course, they're conditioning each other. So that stilling the breath as one, and that's, of course, that's in terms of the, say, the Anapanasati Sutta, then there's that, the fourth aspect of the breath meditation, of that settling, composing, pasampayang, making it tranquil. That's a particular aspect of the breath meditation. Of course, it applies to any meditation, really, in the sense that one is using the meditation object, the attention that we're paying to it, to help to settle and to slow things down, slowing the bodily processes down, and then slowing the mind down, not to the point of sleepiness and drowsiness, but slowing it down to the point of clarity and alertness.
And I have a question in the passage where in the sutta you talk about the body of breath.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And there's a kind of two different views that seem to be rolled about it. One being that it's attending to the beginning, middle, and end of the breath, and then the entire length of breath coming in and going out.
Right.
And the other one, which is more of the Ajahn-Li approach, which is to pay attention to the entire body.
Right.
While the breath is being attended to.
Yeah.
And to me, the set, that way seems to be, of course, obviously, rather than just preference, but it seems to sort of explode attention. There's breath, and then there's the rest of the body, and there's a single thing.
Yeah.
I wonder if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I think those are, there's a, say they're different. They're different stages, or different how do you say? You know, there's at different times the breath is going to you can work with it in many different ways, so that the that's a sense of. Of the one is that the body of the breath is actually in reference to going back to the sutta, the body of the breath, kaya sankara, is in reference to that tranquilizing and settling pasambayang. So that settling, tranquilizing, making calm and peaceful, the body of the breath is quote unquote, and then the previous instruction that the Buddha gives is experiencing the whole body, so that the pati sangvedi is experiencing, and then sambhagaya. So they're two different words that are used, and sometimes they get, you know, there's these raging controversies, but they're actually two different words that are used, and two different stages of actual practice and how one holds the breath, so that that use of the experiencing the whole body I breathe in, experiencing the whole body I breathe out, can very literally be applied to the whole body, but then or paying attention to the the body as one is breathing in and breathing out. And so that there is this connection with the body, and then the kaya sankara is say the body conditioner or the body as a conditioned thing. So that calming and settling, you can be, to me, there's no reason why one can't be applying the perception of the body in different ways, so that it can be just the body of the breath, or it can be the body as we experience it, but as we're breathing in and breathing out. But that aspect is one of calming and settling, so that taking that experience, one can keep refining it, and in a sense, as one's calming the whole body, the breath is going to start to calm itself, and then one can start to refine one's object of attention so that it's just either paying attention to the sensation of the breath as it comes in from tip of the nose to the abdomen, or one can just be paying attention at one particular point and how one's experiencing the body of the breath at that particular point. So I think there's a lot of flexibility how experiencing it and what one's directing one's attention towards. But I think the important thing is that those are two different, say, verbs. So it's, one is the experiencing, so that one's exploring with mindfulness the sensations of the body in conjunction with the breath, the experience of the body in conjunction with the breath. And so that one is exploring with mindfulness and experiencing, getting a real clear familiarity with the breath and the body. And then the next verb, that pasambayang, is that calming, tranquilizing, settling aspect. So that one starts to clarify and make peaceful the experience of the whatever the mind can take interest in is what it you can start where is your starting point for settling and stilling, so that as one continues to work with that, the object can become increasingly refined or can be expanded out as is necessary, depending on what the, say, how settled or how scattered the mind is. So you've got, this is where that working with, learning these tools and learning how to adapt the tools to the task at hand is important.